Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Beloved, we are gathered here today to worship at the altar of music and comedy. The giddiness and the harmony of a well-crafted comedy song brings great joy in abundance. Join the tinkling talents of David Timms and me, Phil Nickel. Sit back, turn it up, and enjoy Songs in the Key of Laugh.
Songs in the Key of Christmas
it's
Laugh.
Christmas.
It's Christmas!
Oh my God!
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas.
Am I getting carried away?
No.
I mean, it's Christmas!
It's Christmas. Oh, you could have done like a comedy Christmas song. You're listening to Songs in the Key of Laugh. I'm Phil Nickel.
And I'm David Timms.
And this is our special Christmas edition and also the end of this very first series.
It is.
My goodness.
It's a bonus episode.
Bonus episode.
Bonus.
Such a good episode. It's going to have Christmas songs. It's going to have a holiday theme.
It's going to have the winner of our competition.
It's a contest.
It's a competition.
It's a comedy song contest.
Oh, I'm so excited.
It's unreasonable. That's going to come up later. We're going to have a Christmas quickfire parody round. We're going to have some silly Christmas themed songs. And we're going to be talking to our extraordinarily funny guest, Mr. Harry Hill. You had a hit album, 2010, Funny Times.
Well, hit depends how you define hit.
Well, it hit
1,300 copies we sold.
Whoa!
Hey, whoa!
shut the front door.
1,300. Yeah.
So it didn't chart.
Spotify. It didn't chart. No, I think the thing was
so many fun Christmas songs. I mean, as novelty songs and comedy songs go, Christmas is the time to put one out.
Aren't all Christmas songs like slightly novelty-ish?
No.
No?
What, Hallelujah?
Hallelujah? That's not a Christmas song.
Isn't it? It came out at Christmas. Was it Christmas number one?
Yeah, it's not a Christmas song, though.
Well, it says that's Hallelujah.
No, it says that's about... It's
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
I thought you meant...
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Surely that's the angels singing hallelujah to the birth of Christ.
Isn't that when he rises again? Isn't that?
Oh, maybe.
I think it might be.
It's the hallelujah chorus.
It is the hallelujah chorus.
We better check that out.
I think it's from the Messiah, which is traditionally sung at Easter.
Yeah, but it's still the same. It's
when he rises. Hallelujah.
They might have been singing it when he was born too.
They could have been.
When he came out of his mum.
Why is that funny?
Christmas was a strange time in my house. Well, not strange, but just because, as you know, I was raised in that kind of devout Christian brethren upbringing. So it was actually a very holy time. And we didn't, the presents and things didn't really play a big part of it. In fact, I don't really remember having much of a Christmas tree. My dad, being Scottish and a builder and being a bit frugal, said, yeah, we don't need, but that's a waste of wood. That's a good waste of wood. And just, I've got, as a pain, that pain coffee table, that used to be a tree. So we put our presents under a pine coffee table that my dad had made.
Well, at least he'd made it. That's very cool.
Yeah, yeah. And then he made everything in the house. And then my mum took a night school ceramics course or something and made one of those like ceramics Christmas trees. You know, the ones you
see? Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
And we would, so that was sitting a doily and we put our presents under the coffee table. And when I don't look at me like that. When I was eight, I got my first guitar.
Yeah.
But my brother, who was 6 years older than me, and a natural musician, took the guitar off me, and by the end of the night, he was going, you know, just, and then handed it back to me. I was like, I don't want to play this anymore. So it was years, not till years later.
It's so annoying when your brothers are better than you at music, isn't it? Luckily, yeah. I've never had that feeling. So it's interesting you mentioned about your Christmas tree there. Have you ever had cats, Phil?
Lack of Christmas tree.
Oh, yeah, sorry, your lack of Christmas tree. Sorry. So no offense. Sorry, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
We had cats, though. Yes, we had cats. I remember we did later on, I think when my dad started doing a bit better, he just maybe gave in to my mum or to Canadian tradition and bought a Christmas tree. But our cats used to knock the baubles off and
absolutely. We've got two cats. We've got Gus, Gus and Winnie. And they not only knock the Christmas tree down, not only knock all of the decorations off, but they also just pull the whole thing down.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how many cats are responsible for like Christmas tree fires every year.
Yeah,
is there a song about it?
I didn't start the fire. Meow 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 meow.
Why is that so silly?
So many really funny, well, not funny, odd, strange, lovely Christmas songs that just we all know, like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer
had a very shiny nose.
Like a light bulb.
And if you ever saw it, you'd even say it glows.
It glows.
All of the other reindeer, used to laugh and call him names.
Like Fred.
You never let poor Fred
play join in any reindeer.
Like so many of those amazing songs. I remember when we started playing the Juice Pigs, one of our, I don't know if it's actually technically a comedy song, but it does fit into it. But it's like a John Denver song. Goes, please, please, Daddy, don't get drunk this Christmas. I don't want to see my mama cry. Drunk this Christmas, I don't want to see my mama cry. I don't want to see my mama cry. I don't want to see my mama cry. But a drunken, they're drunken Santa Claus and the Juice Pigs roll.
That's how we just sang it, to be fair.
Well, we're full of the festive cheer.
We are indeed, yeah.
But the Juice Pigs tried to write, I think Greg Neal wrote one that went, there was something like Christmas dreams, drunken alibis to you, I can't believe that I dance naked with the turkey. Yeah. And we actually played that song on, well, I think maybe I've told this story on the show, but we did it on an Irish television show, and George Martin, the producer, the Beatles producer, was one of the guests on the show. We were booked to do that show, and I was so excited about meeting him, but I wasn't prepared for when I walked into the makeup room, and there he was, leaving, and I was like, it's like, this is the George Martin. I put my hand out to shake his hand. He just put his hand on my shoulder and went, it'll be okay.
Aww.
I was like, yeah, he's touched my arm. Please, Daddy, don't get drunk this Christmas. Anyway, that's my memories.
So my favourite thing, Phil, about Christmas, except for the food, is the inability for people to remember lyrics to Christmas carols.
What do you mean? They're pretty simple.
They're not. Do you know all of the words to O Little Town of Bethlehem?
Oh, little town of Bethlehem, you are a little town. You're a towny town in little town, and so it's easy to get around.
Yeah, you don't know that one, do you? No. What's the Royal David City?
Oh, once a towny David town, towny David, David.
Oh, yeah. Let's
next.
Good King.
Good King Towny Wenceslas Town, Towny Wenceslas Tim.
All right, there's got to be more here.
Try and catch me up.
The first, the first Noel.
The first town now, town now, oh town.
Do you know the Coventry Carol?
No.
Oh my goodness, Phil, it's so sad.
What's the Coventry Carol? It's the bombing of Coventry during the war?
No, it's nothing to do with the bombing of Coventry.
No,
no it's... But it is about children just being taken off by Herod and slayed. There you go. And everybody sings it in a loving, you know, in a really, really cheerful way.
And it was done by Slade? I knew they had a Christmas song, but I didn't know that was that one.
Do you want to say, okay, let's, all right, in your best possible children's voice now, Phil, Away in a Manger.
Okay. Phil.
What?
It's a child. They don't know what they're singing.
Neither do you. It is time to find out who has won our Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song competition.
Well, is it time?
That's the thing. That's
is it
the
time?
Thing.
Well, we had this... And it was a contest. It's a comedy song contest.
No, it's a competition. It's
Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song contest.
Competition. And now, we have had so many entries, as we said, and last week we played you, the 10th episode of our series, we played you the 10 shortlisted entries. Oh my goodness, I'm so excited, and I'm sure that you are at home as well. Yeah. And
we've actually got three. So James Hingley, who is our producer, and Dave and I have chosen the three, the winner and the two runners up of the comedy song contest
competition.
Yeah.
And they will be getting their cash prize.
But before we do that,
oh,
we also had a Christmas submission.
Oh yeah, we're going to do that first.
From
aren't
a
we?
Production team called the Pickle Pals.
The Pickle Pals.
Grandma just ran over Santa's reindeer. Why she sought revenge, I'll never know. She told me she wasn't having problems, but Grandpa said he knew she hit a low. Then she got knocked down the first time. She's held a grudge, and that's for sure. She overdosed on medication, and this revenge seemed to be her only cure. When we found her Christmas morning at the scene of the attack, she had chopped them into pieces. My Aunt Susan nearly had a heart attack. Grandma just ran over Santa's reindeer. It's all over Dateline NBC. They say that Santa was the victim, but as for me and Grandpa, we can see. Now we're all worried about Grandpa. He hasn't taken this real well. See him in there staring blankly. His expression makes it seem like he's seen hell. It's not Christmas in this courthouse. All the family's dressed in black. We all can't help but to wonder, should we rat her out or have her back?
Have her back!
Grandma didn't run over Santa's reindeer. It's what I told the jury at the trial. I think they saw sweat pour from my forehead, and then I was completely immobile. The jury's been in there for hours. I'm trying hard not to predict. Santa's staring at us angry as the jury comes to give us the verdict. I've warned all my friends and neighbors, you better watch out for yourselves. 'Cause now that Grandma's running free, better look out, Santa Claus.
Claus and all your elves.
Grandma just ran over Santa's reindeer, feigning ignorance got her off free.
You may say there's no such thing as karma, but as for old Saint Nick, now he believes. Sing it, Grandpa!
Yes, Lorraine ran over Santa's reindeer. Sure, it was a real gruesome attack. But ever since she started going crazy, we started going crazy in the sack.
That's Dominic and Joe, the Pickle Pals.
The Pickle Pals.
Yeah, and they actually, they're not in the contest because it came in late, but it's also because it's Christmas. We thought we'd play it. But you can go to Spotify and check out the Pickle Pals. There's a discount Christmas album, I think it's called.
Oh, lovely.
I think it's called Discount Christmas Album.
Discount.
Like Discount Christmas Album by the Pickle Pals. Check it out.
We're gonna get given a song we know and have to change it up. Make it so hysterical that you win the cup. This game is really easy, just follow all the rules. The rules are really simple, you're not allowed to lose.
It's the Christmas Quickfire Parody Game, and this is the festive. It's so festive here.
It's so festive. You're in your Santa hat. Yeah. I'm in my Mrs. Santa.
You're in your elf underwear.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. What the heck? It's the Christmas Quickfire Parody Game. And David, I'm gonna throw you a curveball here. The band was called Band-Aid, and the song is Feed the World. Take that. Put that in your pipe and smoke
That's
it.
That's not fair.
Quickfire,
that's so
quickfire
long.
Parody, Feed the World. What do you got? Band-Aid. Was that... Is that... Bob Geldof? George Michael?
It's Christmas crime. There's a need to be afraid. With Christmas crime, they'll steal your lights and your lampshades. In a world of plenty, we attract more robbers. Yeah, lock your doors really carefully at Christmas time. Do you like that?
Steal the world.
That's it. Steal the world. Steal at Christmas time.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Quick fire parody game.
Okay, Phil, I'm sure that you can't possibly beat that. I've been doing so well, and then I've done that.
It's going to be hard.
Yeah, okay. Can you please... I mean, this is already ridiculous in itself.
It is.
Can you... Oh, is it? Do you know what it is, then?
No, I'm just thinking the whole idea of us doing a festive quick fire parody game is...
Could you do the drummer boy? The little drummer boy? Not the big one, the little one.
Little drummer boy.
Yeah.
How are you supposed to?
It's just the little drummer boy. Quick fire parody round. Here goes Philip.
Okay. Have more food, she told me. Pa-rumpa pum pum. I can't eat much more, mum. Pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. I want you to eat some more. Pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. Pum-pa-pum-pum. Pum-pa-pum-pum. I can't eat more, mum. Pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. My dad's asleep and snoring, pum-pa-pum-pum, look at his tum, pum-pa-pum-pum, drink some more rum, and sit on my thumb, a rumpy pump-pump.
Steal the world.
Christmas around my house.
If you'd like to join in the fun, then please send in your songs for the Songs in the Key of Laugh Comedy Song Competition.
Contest. It's a Songs in the Key of Laugh Comedy Song Contest.
It's a competition.
It's a contest, really.
Okay.
Join it.
Okay.
SongsTheKeyOfLaugh@gmail.com. It's time to announce the winner of the Comedy Song Contest.
Competition.
I slowed down because I wanted to get it right. It's the comedy, the Songs the Key of Laugh Comedy Song
Competition.
Contest.
That's the one.
We had 10 amazing finalists. I mean, there were so many songs that didn't even make it into the finals. Please send in your submissions for next series because there's going to be another contest. We loved hearing them. We might even put an album out, put them all in the album, and then it's amazing.
I think it's really important to say when we first started this podcast, we really wanted to give a platform for people who you know maybe haven't had a platform to put their songs on before. So thank you so much for sending them in, and please do keep on doing so. This is it. We've come to the moment where we're going to find out who the runners-up and the winner of the competition is.
The second runner-up is,
oh my goodness, drum roll please.
It's Ed MacArthur.
Ed MacArthur,
an osteopath.
Oh, osteopath.
Osteopath. You're an osteopath.
I love that song.
I love it so much.
It's very hummable. And
it mentions Crouch End as well, which is a nice little bonus.
Ed MacArthur.
Well done, mate.
Just won 50 quid.
Just won £50.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right. Okay. Drum roll again, please, for our second runner-up. Here we go. It's like doing a raffle.
Yeah, it was the second runner-up. Now the first runner-up.
Oh, yes, yes. Who also gets £50.
Yes.
Yes. Here we go. Drum roll.
Eddie Hurst. Robot Knee.
Robot Knee. Robot Knee.
Robot Knee. Robot Knee, it shoots out lasers and it brews coffee. Robot Knee, Robot Knee.
I love the Robot Knee. That was one of the first earliest songs we had on. I gotta say, I thought that was gonna take the crown, but it was gazoomed.
It was.
It was usurped.
Absolutely.
By the winner.
This
of the Songs in the Key of Laugh Comedy Song Competition for Series 1 goes to Canadians in Space,
Only Next Door.
While you're away, I look after your home. It's really no trouble, as I'm only next door. I'll put out your bins and I'll jet wash your drive. Keep an eye on your greenhouse, close your curtains at night. My phone's been on flight mode, I've just got your text. You've no need to worry, it's fine. It's incredibly kind, but you don't have a key. And my mother will see things arise. I've had a word with your mother, and I told her I'd help. It's really no trouble, as I'm only next door. It was hard to convince her, but I now have your key. She didn't look well, and so I phoned her GP. Is my mother alright? Do you still have my key? There's no need to go into my house. It's the least of my worries that my curtains are drawn. I'll be booking the next flight out. I've tidied your garage, I've defrosted your fridge, I've oiled your bike chain, and I've treated your fence. I've cut down the trees that were blocking the light, kept an eye on your greenhouse, closed your curtains last night. Did you knock at my text? Is my mother alright? I'm struggling to book on a flight. I'm increasingly worried. Did you get my voicemail? I'm beginning to lose my mind. weather got worse and she called out for you. So I shaved off my mustache and dressed in your suit. I told her I loved her as I sat by her side. She thought I was you at the moment she died. It's really no trouble as I'm only next door.
That's the Canadians of Space and their song Only Next Door. Adam and Lee, congratulations, guys. The first competition, the inaugural.
The inaugural. Songs in the Key of Love comedy song competition. well done, guys. You are the winners of £200.
£200.
Yeah, you'll have to share it between you. But
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas. Thank you so much. Please keep on sending them in for next year's competition.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And as promised, our interview section is next. And I loved interviewing this guy.
It was very exciting. I kind of the build up to it was just as exciting as the actual interview itself.
With a great story about Simon Cowell.
Very good story about Simon Cowell. It is
Harry Hill.
The guest on today's show. And if you don't, that's your own fault. But you'll know them soon.
You know you will.
This jingle has been personalized for a guest that we hope that you recognize. And this week their name is insert name here.
It's Harry Hill. It's Harry Hill.
Hey.
I can't believe it's Harry Hill.
I like that jingle.
Thank you very much.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you.
That was David Timms and the Biggish Band.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you can hear me in it as well.
Yeah, I like the production values. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations on your production values.
I feel like we're off to a good start, to be honest, Harry. What do we want to say to you? I mean, if there's anyone out there in the UK that doesn't know who you are, that'd be a bit nuts. But there must be someone. I'm sure there's a person somewhere.
So living under some sort of horrendous rock.
Yes,
somewhere.
Exactly. Yes. So Harry Hill, I mean, when did I meet you? I met you back in 1990, 1991?
When you were with Corky and the Juice Pigs.
That is it.
Or was
yes.
it the Doug Anthony All-Stars? I forget.
You're teasing. We were better than them.
Yeah.
I remember when we first went to Australia, people were going, "You're like the Doug Anthony All-Stars." We're like, yeah, except
oh, really?
Don't smell. Yeah. Yeah, we're like, our clothes don't smell and we're funny.
I've got a video of, I think it's my 30th birthday.
Okay.
You remember Yone, of course. I think was the connection,
yes.
wasn't it? Yone
yes,
Matheson.
It was. Yeah.
It was. Well, did he produce something for you, or I don't know?
He took you under his wing, didn't he? Yes, at the same time. Great wings.
Yeah, he took me under the other one.
Yeah, and he had Nick Revel, I believe, under his tail feather. We were doing at the BBC. We had a Radio 1 special. We have two Radio 1 specials, Court the Juice Pigs, and you were doing hair. You were
when I was doing Weekending, writing for Weekending. Hmm. But I've got this video. It's in some pub in Soho, and you come in at some point and start singing and playing the guitar, and yeah, it's quite funny. Then we all go back to Jan's place.
Oh man, I'd love. And yeah. Does the video take all the way back to Jan's place?
Yeah, yeah, it's walking down the street. It's like 90, whenever it is, 94.
Sure, 1994. Yeah, and then for people that don't know, this is Jon Magnusson, who then
son
became
of Magnus.
Son of Magnus, who was the mastermind of Mastermind.
Right,
it's the original before your time, Mastermind David. Host,
The original.
But like Doctor Who's, he's my host of Mastermind.
Exactly. And his name was Magnus Magnusson, which I think is a magnificent name.
Yeah,
it's like if my name was Timmy and then Timmy Timms.
You'd be Timmy Timms.
I would be Timmy Timms.
Where is he from? Is it Icelandic? Is it? Yeah, is it
Icelandic? He's Icelandic. Yeah,
yeah. That was the thing. And you see, in the '70s, when Magnus Magnusson broke, no one had heard of anyone from Iceland.
More famous than Bjork.
Before Bjork, yeah.
Before pre-Bjork, but I wonder if Bjork looks up to Magnus Magnusson.
I don't think he was anything in his own country. I think he was just like nothing in his own country.
Oh, no, you could not be nothing. Surely people looked to Britain and thought, he's made it. I mean, at that point, you still had to take boats to get there and stuff, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah,
I don't think you could fly there.
Six weeks.
It's going to be like that now that Brexit's coming into full force.
How has it come in?
Yeah, has it?
I just need to read. You know, I haven't read a paper for so long.
No.
I noticed that bacon had gone up.
What paper do you read? Are you a Daily Mail?
My wife reads the Daily Mail. Thank you very much. I don't care what anyone says. I get the Times delivered.
Do you?
I'm the paper man, the news agent's one of his best customers.
Okay, let's get serious.
I
wanted to ask you about
it started yet?
This is it, actually. And thanks for joining us. That's been Harry Hill. you had an album, okay? Because with this podcast, Songs in the Key of Laugh. That's why we're here. It's about musical comedians and musical comedy songs. And you had a hit album, 2010, Funny Times.
Well, hit depends how you define hit.
Well, it hit
1,300 copies we sold.
Whoa.
Hey, whoa.
shut the front door.
1,300, yeah.
So it didn't chart.
Spotify. It didn't chart, no. I think the thing was, it was released by Island Records, yeah.
Oh, right, yeah.
So they had, big. I got quite a big advance for it. And they, you know, they have Bob Marley and they had me. I think they were, you know what this thing where you get, where they're all very keen before it comes out, and you get you get this money in advance and stuff, and then you just don't hear anything from them. If something's you always know if something's a hit, you know if it's, and you also, you know by default if it's not a hit. Because if it's a hit, they're phoning you. Have you seen the ratings? Have you heard about how many you've sold? And but if it's not, they just don't. No one calls you.
Yeah, which maybe that's a saving. Maybe that they've learned not to call people, so you're not upsetting you.
Yeah, yeah, but until you realise that, you're thinking, oh, no one's called me. I wonder how it's doing.
Yeah. And this was back in the day. Would you be able to check? I mean, nowadays you could just go online and check numbers, but then 2010.
Yeah, there was still, we had online and stuff. I don't know. I mean, I just didn't want to, I suppose I don't know. I mean, I don't know how I know it was 1,300 copies.
All right.
It was a lot of fun to do. It was me and Steve Brown.
Tell us a little bit about Steve Brown, because we'll get to it later. I came to see a little workshop. That sounds a bit condescending. A workshop presentation of your new.
Good news on that, by the way.
Oh, you got good news. Okay, well, I've known Steve the same way, in a roundabout way, and saw him there. And I wanted to ask you how you came to meet Steve, and how did your relationship?
Okay, well, I was I always like to have music in my touring act.
Yeah.
So I would have I used to have a keyboard player and a drummer, right? So the first keyboard player I had was Richard Thomas.
Oh, right. Yeah.
We had him on the podcast.
You had him on the podcast. So, of course, he was too busy working for Frank Skinner.
Oh no.
We had to find a drummer, right? So it was really funny. We auditioned a load of drummers. I mean, it was, you think
did Al Murray not put his hand up?
Al was busy. Well, that was the original lineup, I guess, was Al Murray on drums.
Right. Okay.
And my little friend Matt, who you may remember.
I remember Matt, yeah. saxophonist.
Did
Matt play saxophone?
No, yeah, did he play 5'2"? No, he didn't play that. No.
Oh. Okay.
He liked to have a drink, but he didn't play the saxophone. So Al got too successful.
Oh.
You know, I mean, he was ploughing his own furrow. So yes. I had to find it. So we auditioned drummers. It's really weird, really difficult to get a drummer. And I thought it would be easy. And we got this, you know, the guy who runs the Bearcat Club, Graham.
Yeah. Graham, yeah.
He said, oh, I'm the drummer, I'll come along, right? He's coming. He came along. And it was like a bloke banging two biscuit tins with sleepers, railway sleepers. Boom, 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 boom. No offence, Graham. So he didn't get a job. And then there was an American guy, right? A stocky little American guy, really tight. Really great, just fantastic. Yeah. And so we said, yeah, you got the job, right? And then he turned up for the first gig and he had a black eye.
No.
Right? Which is never a good sign. He said, my girlfriend hit me.
Okay.
So, okay. And then it turned out he didn't have a work permit and he was going to be
very serious very quickly.
Deported. And so we had to hold another audition.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
And we got this guy, Ozzy. You may have met Ozzy. He plays. He plays drums for a lot of the Pantos. He's like West End. He's really smart, quick.
Yeah.
Just plays off the dots, you know.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't do it for the money. So we said, you got the job. He said, no, I'm not doing it for that money.
Oh,
no. He said, try this guy, Mark Ellis.
Okay.
And he said, yeah, okay, I'll do it. So it's just like, you know.
But you've got...
It's just like the default guy. But it worked out really well. And Mark was brilliant drummer and also just really good company.
Yeah,
and you know what it's like when you're touring around. You need people that you know that you get on with. It's not going to be trouble.
And, I toured with a little band of two guys that I did my one of my shows with, the Nearly Gay show, and one of them was a hardcore vegan and the other was a hardcore vegetarian, and they wouldn't let me it was actually the Naked Races, because we used to get naked at the end,
right.
and it was. Should I maybe not go down this path? you could rank the vegan had a larger member. He was quite proud of it, and then the other guy was sort of mid size, and there was me with my carnivorous weenie. I guess
notoriously small.
I didn't know it was notorious, so that's nice to know
in showbiz circles.
but they were a lot of fun to work with, but one of the problems I had with them is, of course, they wouldn't let me eat meat in the car.
Which is
I think it was the end of the, you know, made the touring quite difficult for me.
So we've got your drummer now. So where did, is it Steve?
So then
where
Richard, Steve? So Richard Thomas was the keyboard player then, because we all had the same agent, Boo Hiss. And so Richard got busy, and the agent had been going on at me about Steve Brown, right? Mm. But because he'd been recommending him, I thought, oh, you know, I always felt like he was trying to fob me off with other acts that he represented. So in the end, I was kind of desperate, and I said, okay, well, I'll meet him. So I meet Steve in the office, and he comes in, he's 10 years older than me. Mm. So he's really, and he was like really surly. And like, didn't want to be there. And I was saying, oh, hi, Steve. And I remember saying to him, so, you know, we're quite a small little band. Are you okay sort of carrying your own sort of keyboard into the, you know, loading you in and out? And he goes, yeah, I'll pull my weight. Right? Really sort of. But I had no choice. So I hired him. I mean, it was like a really sort of difficult. I thought, okay, well, this guy's trouble. But in fact, we became really good friends. Mm. You know,
you've written quite a lot of things together.
And, you know, so he did all the music for, well, he did some of the music for the old Channel 4 show. He did all those jingles for TV Burton, TV Highlight of the Week. That's his voice, you know.
Nice.
TV Burton Poetry Corner. And so then, and when, and you know, and actually when I first met him, that tour, he just got Spend, 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 this musical he'd written. He just got it off the ground in the West End. And in fact, I put some money into it, which I never got back. Brackets. never do that. And so, you know, that his heart is in writing musicals, and he'd written one before. Mm. And Spend, Spend, Spend got an Evening Standard Best Musical or something. He got a letter, and he's got a framed letter in his studio from Stephen Sondheim saying, "Dear Steve, blah, 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 came and saw your musical. You may have written the first good British musical."
What?
From Stephen Sondheim.
Yeah. Wow. Very high acclaim indeed.
Wow. Yeah, it took me ages to get that to headed notepaper, right? But don't tell him. No, it was pretty good, wasn't it? I had this idea to write the X Factor musical. Yes. Perhaps jumping ahead, but I...
No.
Of course, the first person I phone up is Steve Brown.
Yeah.
And after a long pause, he said, let's talk about it. He wasn't very keen.
Was it your idea to write the X Factor musical?
Because, you know, I was doing TV Burp and I watched every episode of X Factor, not just every other or right. Did I ever miss one? I watched every single episode of X Factor for that show.
Wow, okay.
And as it was coming to the end, TV Burp, I was thinking, how can I turn this information, you know, this useless information, basically, into some kind of art?
Yes.
Or better still, money. And so I was watching the final, having had a few drinks, and I had this brainwave. Right, I thought, we'll write X Factor musical. And so I got in touch, got in touch with Simon Cowell, got in touch with Steve, and we had this bizarre meeting with Simon Cowell in his office.
And what did Simon Cowell originally think of the idea? Did he think it was...
Well, so we turn up, right? So they say, well, you know, the meeting's at 11 o'clock or something. And I can't remember the way around it. Oh, yeah. So the first meeting, we turned up and Simon's got this assistant. Well, not assistant. He's the he's his kind of right-hand man. Everything has to go through Nigel, right? And who's very... a very camp northerner. I first met him, he was the producer of Stars in Their Eyes when I did Morrissey on Celebrity Stars in Their Eyes. Mm-hmm. Incredibly camp, really funny. And we turn up and he says, Simon's running a bit late, okay? Mm-hmm. So he's going to be a while, okay? Just wait here, you know, they give some magazines to him. And then 10 minutes later, he says, Simon's in the car and he's left his house. Right. So then 20 minutes later, Simon's on the West Way. It's going to be a little while. Simon's turning into the road. Simon's in the building. And then basically, here's Simon. And the door opens and there's Simon, you know, in this kind of pall of tobacco smoke. And so I, you know, I just sort of punted these sort of various ideas of what it would be and, you know, celebrate. As you know, what we used to do on TV Burp was say it's a celebration. When we were taking the piss out of something, we would say it's a celebration.
So
he said, yeah, fine, go ahead and do it. And then the second meeting was a kind of, I wrote this synopsis, which is, did you ever see it, the musical?
No, I never saw
it. Well, you're not alone, as it turns out.
I really want to see it, but
the broad outline was it was about a girl who lived in a caravan under a flyover in basically an ITV black spot. So she had never heard of the X Factor, and she lived with her grandfather, who was on an iron lung. Okay, and a plumber comes round to fix the shower, and tells this grandfather, she's out, tells the grandfather about the X Factor. He thinks this is their way out of the ghetto.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, and he gives this guy his, because he's going to enter the X Factor, he gives him his forms, but unfortunately, as he plugs his power tools in, he inadvertently unplugs the iron lung, and the old guy dies, clutching the forms to the X Factor, right? It's a long, complicated story, but it involves a hunchback... and at the end, Simon reveals himself as an alien and says and says that he says I was sent down because my planet has run out of money. And then disappears. So I'm going through all this, right? And I had these storyboards drawn up because I'd heard that he had a very short attention span. So I'm holding it and I said, this happens, okay? And then this happens. And he is laughing. I can't tell you, Phil. He is laughing his head off.
Wow.
He's slapping his... I was kind of looking at Steve like, this is nuts. You know, this is too much. And then Steve wrote this song. And they said to us, we've banned two words backstage at X Factor. Right? We no longer allow the words journey, as in, you know, this has been a fantastic journey for me, and, you know. Mm-hmm. And the other one was dream. So you're not allowed to say, I've been dreaming about it all my life. This is my dream, right? Okay. So Steve wrote this song called I'm Dreaming of a Journey on My Journey to a Dream. Right? So I get to the end of the plot, right? It's just the broad outline. And then Steve puts the CD player into Simon's CD player and starts playing this song. And he's loving it, right? Simon is singing along. And he says, that's great, Steve. He said, but it could do with a couple of key changes, right? And Steve goes, nah. Right? And suddenly the whole thing froze.
No.
And Simon goes, yeah, it could do with a key change. And Simon says, Steve says, I don't think so, because, you know, what we're doing here, blah, blah, blah. Right?
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, and I said, well, we can deal with that when we get, you know, sort of smoothing things over. Well, you know, this isn't the finished thing, Simon, you know, it's all work in progress.
Sure.
Anyway, so he said yes to the project. Next day, I get a phone call from... Nigel was saying, how important is Steve? And I said, well, you know, he writes the music. So, yeah, so we came to an arrangement. But, yeah, it was quite funny that. He said, he can't argue with Simon. And I said, well, he wasn't really arguing. He said, that's the closest he's come to an argument for 10 years.
Oh, you know, really?
And that was very much the experience. I really liked Simon. I think he was actually a very sort of interesting bloke. But there was this kind of thing. It's the kind of court of Simon, and you know, it was very much we were the kind of jesters, and he couldn't really say no to him. And the other sticky bit was like 2 weeks before it. Before opening nights, we moved into the Palladium. We were halfway through previews. Yeah. And Simon came along with his girlfriend, and then I got an email the next day saying, "I feel like the character of Simon is made to look rather ridiculous."
He's an alien from another.
And I thought, oh, you know, but we just ignored it, and it was fine. But so that's how. So yeah, so me and Steve, we worked together for a long time. And that was the most fun we'd ever, personally, the most fun I ever had was doing that musical, even though it did only last 6 weeks.
But I heard that it was, I genuinely heard that it was great. And
yeah, it was pretty good. I thought it was good. Yeah.
It didn't quite capture, it was whatever it is, but the way people that go and see musical and West End musicals, that wasn't the audience for it.
Well, you know what it was, Phil? It was the perfect storm. People who like The X Factor don't go to musicals, and people who like musicals don't go to The X Factor.
The X Factor. Yeah.
You know, it's the intersection is tiny. But the main thing was really that we took the Palladium on, which was like nuts.
That's amazing.
I mean, not me personally. It was the whole kind of... it's difficult to think back, you know, when in 2012, when X Factor was just like the biggest thing. It was on in the papers every day. Everyone was talking about, you know, it's like One Direction, Little Mix. It was that time.
Yeah.
And actually, you and I know that you have this idea, and then it sort of takes 2 years to come to fruition, doesn't it? Because you need to write the thing and then get the big sort of stalling thing is getting the theatre. And by the time we opened, it was just slightly on the decline, I think.
Wasn't that also one of the first shows that had attempted opening as a new show at the Palladium?
Because it's the only one.
2,600 seats or something, the Palladium.
2,400, no one had ever opened a show.
No.
At the Palladium, it turns out.
I mean, you weren't funding it personally, were you?
No, I didn't know. I didn't know. No, not at all. No, I mean, I didn't really make any money. I made some money, but, you know, I thought I'd be rich. I thought this would be the thing. Because at that time, X Factor was in 84 different countries. And I thought, well, yeah, yes. million, you know, Shanghai, we'll have one going in, you know, Lagos, New York, you know, Hong Kong. Yeah. It'll be everywhere. And it'll just be, the letterbox will just be constantly ringing with the checks coming through.
Yeah.
We'll have to get two letterboxes.
Yes.
But it wasn't to be, no.
Yeah. I had the same thing with my Two Girls, One Cup musical. I just thought, that's going to be... That's
what
gonna
was
be
that?
Massive.
What was that? I didn't know about
Do you know Two Girls, One Cup?
Isn't no.
That? Oh, no.
No, and you don't want to.
It's a horrible internet thing where two
You're not going to describe
women,
this to... No.
Two women poo into a cup.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Okay. That's not. Mm. I mean, it was massive online because what became more famous was people's reaction to watching the video became the sensation. So you didn't have to watch the video. I've never seen the actual video myself. Mm. I've only seen the people's reactions, and it was just a huge internet sensation. Maybe
so
not.
Say.
And you were going to make this, and you were going to make this into a musical.
Yes, I thought you could have a character. You could have the bum. Coming through, the actual poo. Coming through, the cup. Blah, don't hurt me. Then the two girls. I mean, it wasn't going to be big scale.
I have a question about putting ideas to Simon Cowell. Mm. I've recently been writing music with Mike Chapman, who he wrote.
Ginny Chap.
Yeah, Chili Chap. Yes, so I write with Mike. Mm.
Simply the best.
Okay. Simply the best, and Lonely This Christmas, and lots of amazing
tunes.
Yeah,
great 70s bubblegum pop, basically, wasn't it?
Yeah. Mm.
Blondie.
So, Blondie, yes. So I write with him, but any time that I put anything to him, I slightly like dissolve as a human being as I give it to him. Mm. Going, is he going to like it? Well, how was it putting an idea in front of Simon Cowell?
Well, for me, you see, it was I just found the whole thing really amusing. Just the fact that we were in there pitching the idea. You know, you meet. I mean, obviously, he's very famous, but I didn't have any. I wasn't intimidated by him because I didn't really have any respect for him. That sounds harsh, but it wasn't something that I thought, oh, wow, that's an amazing thing you've done. You know, I mean, you know, if you meet your heroes, you're kind of like jelly. And perhaps for you, it's a similar thing with
Mike. But you had to bring him in, and you had to sort of convince him in order to get to be able to use the whole name and everything.
Yeah,
so
were you
trying to pull the wool over his eyes? Was it a bit?
No, I genuinely thought we could do a really good job, and I did, and I do think we did a good job. You know, particularly Steve, the songs for it were great, and but it was just one of those. I mean, you know, I'd never, you know, it's not like I ever had any ambition to write a musical. Really, it was just like all I can say is, you know, I'd had a few drinks in front of the final, and there we were, I don't know, a year later, and it's opening at the Palladium. You know, and they're all there. Terry Wogan's there, and, you know, Amanda Holden, Sunita, and, I mean, it was just nuts. It was nuts, because that it all comes with that big circus, you know, the Simon Cowell Circus.
Did you like musicals before you wrote one?
No. I don't like them. I don't like musicals. Don't like them. This is the thing. I then had to think, I better watch a few musicals. I mean, I like, you know, the musicals I liked were, I mean, I like Oliver because, you know, I was in that as a kid, and I like Joseph. But I mean, most of the musicals I went to see, they were all too long. They were like half an hour, at least half an hour too long.
Right.
And they were sort of soppy. And I, you know, I've got this real beef about the way people sing in musicals. That kind of, and the best example I've got is Let It Go.
Let It Go!
That kind of weird way. No one really sings like that. It's a real kind of, I don't know why musical theatre, people in musical theatre sing differently. I mean, not all of them, but a lot of them, they just kind of, it's a weird sound. It's not like, it's kind of devoid of any personality.
It's trained, very trained.
It's highly trained.
Yeah. They go to it. I've been in a few musicals, as you know.
Yeah.
A lot of the young people in it are, you know, like go to Italia Conti. I'd never heard of Italia Conti. It's where they go. And they're very strict with their discipline of being able to sing. But I think it's not quite opera.
Opera's a different thing.
It's good. They're two completely and utterly
different. Do you like opera, though?
Well, I mean, I never go. I mean, I have been to a couple of them, and I like them. But
has the X Factor musical been remounted by anyone?
No, we were nearly going to do it. I then spent, when it got cancelled, I spent ages going around meeting all these West End types, you know, begging them to put it on. Because I think actually it would have done well on a tour. It might well have done. What we should have done should have started what everyone does. Yeah. You know, I don't know why we didn't. It was nuts.
Yeah,
we should have started it in Manchester or something and toured it around. You know, I think it probably would have done all right. But I couldn't get anyone to, because we lost, not me personally, but it lost a huge amount of money.
Yes, I remember that.
Millions and millions of quid. So, and that, you know, we both know that's what success is about, really. You know, we can kid ourselves it's about awards and reviews, but really, it's only when you start making money for people that they are suddenly interested in your next project.
Sure.
You know, in truth. And so they weren't interested in and then we were approached out of the blue by this promoter just before the lockdown. Well, maybe a year before the lockdown. It's all due to happen. And then, of course, the lockdown thing.
All right.
And now somehow I've kind of lost interest in it. I kind of think, I had a, you know, actually what happened was, at least, I'm not sure I should even tell this. The promoter contacted me, right, and said, you know, we loved it and, you know, we think it could do well on a little tour. So I said, oh, great, you know, this is great news. I better just call Simon Cowell's people to see where they are with it because, you know, they don't like failure. I mean, I never heard from him again after it closed. I never heard anything, right? It was cut off like the, you know, black sheep of the family. Anyway, so I got in touch with Nigel, and I said, just wondering how, you know, how it is with the musical, if we were going to tour it again. And he loved it, right? Nigel loved it. He was a really big supporter of it. He basically, I think, talked Simon into it. And he said, you know, Simon's in a really good mood about it. He said he loved the musical. And in fact, the other night we were singing the songs from it. Right, which was an interesting image. He said, but there is one thing you can do to get this over the line. I said, what's that? And he said, is there a part for Sunita?
No way.
And I heard myself saying, of course.
Yes, yeah. But of course, yeah.
So, yeah, but then it never happened.
Never happened. But if it does come to fruition, will there be?
It won't now. I don't think it will. Steve was very. We were both very keen on it happening, but I think the best thing is to just start something new.
You've moved on. So I said earlier in the interview, very kindly invited me to see a small presentation of what had been a workshop with Charlie Baker. Was Charlie in the original musical as well? Was Charlie in the X Factor musical?
He was. That's how I met Charlie. I didn't know him as a comic. He played the Hunchback. Trevor Modo.
Trevor Modo.
That's how I heard about the musical. Is that because I have a friend of Charlie, and Charlie said, I'm in this musical at the Palladium. I was like, that's amazing.
He was brilliant in it.
Yeah, he's a great singer. He's a fantastic performer. Yeah. And again, really nice company, a good company. It's easy company. So Charlie plays.
Because, you know, the thing was, I don't know about. The other thing about people in musicals is, apart from the singing, is when they're supposed to be funny, a lot of them just end up milking the laughs and just slowing the whole thing down and killing it. And the great thing about Charlie and the cast that we put together on the whole was that we chose people with comic timing. And, it's really difficult to – you've got to find people who are funny, you can sing – dance, all that stuff. So So Charlie was great. Yeah, and so he was our kind of first choice for for playing Tony Blair.
Yeah, you've obviously worked with him, or he's been in your show.
Yeah, in my so then I got him in the TV show as a hunch, as the Hunchback.
Yeah.
When I did this Tea Time show, Harry Hill's Tea Time.
Yeah.
Which also sunk without trace, but was my favourite show to do.
Is that your the cooking?
It's the cooking one, yeah.
The Sky. Cooking show, yes.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
I have seen little bits of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, no, it was. I really do. I love that show, and I can't really understand why. I mean, I made the pilot for ITV, or it should have been an ITV show, but they just didn't like it. I couldn't really understand it. And I do know, I kind of learned that you can't really make them have it. I mean, I could have made them have it, but if they're not really enthusiastic about it, you're sort of wasting your time. So we did it on Sky, which was, they were great to work for, but, you know, no one watches it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Well, back then, anyway.
But that's so funny. I mean, that's a whole other discussion because
yeah, sure.
You think that, no, but think because that would bring, I just assume that a Harry Hill project would bring an audience with it. But of course, that's not always, it depends where it is in the schedule, depends how they promote it, whether they give it enough time. There are so many other factors that have nothing to do with how good the show is and how much you're enjoying it and who and
yeah.
necessarily who's on it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I mean, Sky, you know, people who were, in at that time anyway, people would just bought it for the sport.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, Sky One was like 4 episodes of The Simpsons.
Right.
League of Their Own.
Yeah.
And bedtime. I mean, that's pretty much it. So it's a certain demographic, I think. It's very popular on the high security wings of prisons. I'm joking.
Well, so Tony Blair the musical. It's not Tony Blair the musical. It's Tony Blair the rock musical.
The rock opera. Is it,
the rock
is it
opera.
Rock
Tony
opera,
Blair
rock musical. Rock opera. Yeah, it's rock a popper. It's a popper really because it's a mix of styles. But yeah, it's
and Charlie and Charlie plays Tony Blair.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about it. Tell us about give us a
so originally synopsis. The idea, right? So after X Factor, I was desperate to do another because this is an old idea. I've had this knocking around for 5 years. So I was thinking about jukebox musicals and about how crowbarred the songs are. The best one is the best worst one is We Will Rock You, isn't it? Of course, which is all over the place.
Yeah.
And so I thought we could take a really serious subject like Tony Blair's kind of rise and fall and set it to bubblegum pop music, the songs of bubblegum pop, because I'd been given a CD which was called Vintage Cheese.
Okay.
I've got it here somewhere. Vintage Cheese, which is all those songs like, you know, Where's Your Mama Gone? You know, Chirpy Chirpy Cheep Cheep, Knock Three Times,
yeah,
I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing, all those kind of actually Mike Chapman songs. So I wrote this thing with the idea that it would be a jukebox musical, and I had a little workshop that I think Charlie came to, Simon Lipkin came, and a few others, and Steve played him on the piano, and it became clear within about 15 minutes that one of those songs by itself is just is fantastic, but right. one after the other is just makes your ears bleed. I mean, it's just it was just awful. So it took me that long, this long, to get Steve to write original songs for it. I was sort of saying, well, maybe we could write some original songs for it, Steve. And he's saying, oh, well, you know, or he was busy or he was doing something else.
Right.
But so he's written original songs for it. And it's a great, the thing about Tony Blair, it's just a great story. It's kind of Shakespearean in that he starts off as a sort of peace-loving hippie. You know, he wants to be lead. He's a front man of a sort of knockoff Rolling Stones, and then he ends up as this kind of, you know, obviously with the war and you know, he rides to become prime minister on this on a wave of hope. Everyone is so kind of he's young and he's got a smile and he's a brilliant communicator. And then, of course, you know, he gets drunk with power and it's the war in Iraq and everyone just hates him suddenly. So it's a kind of... And now if you bumped into him, you probably wouldn't even ask him for a selfie, would you?
No, probably not.
You wouldn't
definitely
put that
wouldn't.
On Instagram because no, you know no. that you're going to get hate by
yeah. He doesn't realise, though. I don't know if he realises.
He must realise.
No, I don't think he does.
He's either, I don't know if he's fooling himself or... And he's, you know, and the whole thing that he wouldn't apologise, he'd do it the same. So that's the, so it's a great story.
I like the running joke in it of the Gordon Brown handing over to Gordon Brown, which is set up quite early on when they're in uni together. Yeah.
Well, the funny thing about it was when we were doing that workshop, they were also running that BBC documentary, which you haven't, if you haven't seen it, Blair Brown, The Story of New Labour on BBC One was really great. Because I didn't do a huge amount of research for this. It was mainly Wikipedia.
Okay.
So, and they are a really interesting double act because, you know, Brown is the kind of serious intellectual but hopeless at communicating, and Blair's the opposite.
Yeah.
So is this going to go into production? Is that the idea?
So it's coming. So, you know, I mean, it's not been announced, but between you and me, it's happening in, all being well, you know, Omicron aside, it's May, June, we're going to be putting it on at the Finsbury Park, at the Park Theatre.
At the Park Theatre. Fantastic.
Yeah, we're going to put it on properly. And it's a great theatre for it as well. You know, are we
able to tell our listeners that as well?
Yeah,
that,
I'm sure you can. Yeah. Yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
Because our listeners tend to be just friends and family who all live, including
Jez, who runs the park, who lives across the road from my parents.
There you go. Yeah. Well, maybe I should just run it. We can run it past him. But I think it's fine. What harm could it do?
No. Yeah, the 12 people that listen to this podcast.
But it went surprising, that workshop. You know, it was people reading it from scripts. But it seemed like we kind of hit a chord with people's interest in that time, actually.
Yes. Well, oddly, I didn't say this. Someone said it to me after, but they said that they felt they were watching the next Jerry Springer, the musical.
Which
brings us back to Richard Thomas, I guess. Because it has that kind of scope to it, and it's funny, it's filthy, it's mad, but it also touches on some very serious and dark topics.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, and it's treading the. That's what I was worried about, was treading the line. You know, so the second half, you know, walking the line between, you know, good and bad taste and how far you can get away with it. Because, you know, the second half, as you know, opens with Osama bin Laden in his cave singing a song called Kill the Infidel. Yeah. And somehow we get away with it.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, you've earned it by that point, I think, because But I did like the touches where you accuse the audience.
Yeah.
You blame the audience. So you blame especially a theater audience sitting in the Park Theater watching this thing would have all probably been without a doubt people that voted for Tony Blair.
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing about, because we didn't want to write that kind of musical where you're just sort of pointing the finger and saying, oh, you're a liar, Blair, liar, kind of thing, because it's more subtle than that. Because the fact is, he did win an election after the war in Iraq and after the David Kelly thing, you know. So, yeah, you're right. We, at the end, we are sort of saying, well, you voted for me. He says, you know, so who's the monster? Is it you or me? And, you know, if you didn't like it, why did you, you know, a million people went on the march against the war, but, you know, 9 million people voted for him in the election. So it's trying to be, and, you know, and obviously at the end, Steve's written this brilliant song, basically saying that the world's run by arseholes, always has been, and this time it was me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which kind of just about saves it, I think, because without it being preachy, because I think that's always the danger with any kind of satire, is you end up sort of being a bit sort of finger wagging and preachy.
Somehow it pulls it away. That's what I liked about it. It obviously is teasing the liberal sensibilities of the audience, so it doesn't come down on a line. It doesn't say this is how Harry Hill feels about this, but it actually, if you deeply, you're making fun of the entire thing, and all the characters in it are spoof characters. The American, you know, George Bush, and is it George Bush? And, you really have a good solid.
And I think also it sort of makes the point that leaders in the past have done as bad things, if not worse, but The reason we are so disappointed is that we had such high hopes for Tony Bennett. That's the crux of it, I think, is that we thought he was different.
Yeah, that is true. No one's surprised at Boris.
No, exactly. Exactly.
No one's surprised at that.
Yeah,
no.
He's still getting in.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying our conversation, Harry.
I've got before we go on to the.
I'm not enjoying it.
That's good. Yeah, cheers. we'll edit that out. We'll actually edit around, so just take out the knot. So, yeah. And that'll be our sailing. Yeah,
Harry. Over the past week, I have had the amazing pleasure of reading your new book, Fight.
Oh right, you've been reading my autobiography, Fight.
I have, and it is wonderful.
Oh, you like it? Oh, that's good.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
So you've heard that
it,
story about
Simon Cowell.
Yeah.
I have, but in reading it, I've found that it's kind of, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
You don't know. No, wait a minute. I'm going to find it in a second. It's when you try and tell some, it's lessons, right? I feel like you're giving lessons to people who are just about to take their path towards show business or towards comedy. And I think anybody who is starting on their path to comedy should read it. I think it's brilliant. I think it deals with how difficult the industry is. I think it deals with success and with failure, and I think it has a really clear and strong message to always try new things. And I think you put it across so well.
Oh, thanks. Well, I'm thrilled. I mean, that is sort of what I mean. I set out to write a thing. I mean, my mum got on the phone the other day and was saying, oh, why'd you put yourself down in that book so much? But I think what is interesting, the interesting stories are the failures. Because I think, or the things that go wrong, they're not like big failures. You know, some of them are just like pilots I made that were kind of weird or odd or just, you know, because I think everyone knows your success, but, you know, the stories from success are, you know, they just tend to be kind of braggy and less interesting. And I think, you know, it's a truth that we learn more from things that go wrong. And we get better stories from them, you know, for sure. I'm glad I mean, obviously there's some stuff in there about, it's just my kind of opinions on stand-up and how you kind of put together an act and stuff. I mean, I don't know if everyone would necessarily agree with that, but, you know,
I think it's a wonderful, like,
thank you.
Tutorial for somebody to read. I think it's great. Your journey, like, specifically is really, really interesting, but it does I think it's there for anybody who's starting their journey. It's really, really wonderful.
You're not allowed to use the word journey, by the way.
Not allowed to use the word journey, of course not. Okay. No, no, but you did find your dream. So
what I came to learn, and this is an obvious thing, and, you know, it barely needs stating, but what I came to learn partly from that experience doing the musical was that you have to enjoy the process. Because so often, for a long time, I was just chasing the thing. And that was broadly success or this idea of success or whatever it was. So with TV Burt, which was my big success, you know, which kind of put me on the map and got me into Simon's office in the first place, that was a big success. But I didn't really enjoy a lot of it. I don't have a lot of fond memories from the 10 years I did it. Because I was just kind of, that's done, that's, you know, I've done this show, right, next one. I was always kind of, felt like it was going somewhere. But in fact, of course, sometimes these things do lead to other things. But actually, if you don't enjoy, most of the time they don't. And unless you enjoy the process, then you blink. And that's like for me, it was my 40s, basically. Gone.
Yeah, well. I think one of my favorite parts. I'm just about to, in February, I'm going to become a dad.
All right,
and I've been, thank you. But I've been very nervous about how it's going to affect my work. And we've just started doing our shows at the Comedy Store.
It's not with me. That is you're wondering.
Oh, right. No, sorry. The baby isn't. No. But I've taken what you said about what you've said about working and having kids and like your work life balance. I've taken all of that on board. I just find it all really interesting. It's a really good book. All of our listeners should go and get it.
Well, the thing about your, and I had that same worry. This is the point I'm making the book. I think you're getting at is that I thought, oh, it's going to take my edge off. You know, I have to have a baby. It's going to, you know, this whole thing about, you know, a pram in the hall and spoiling your creativity. But actually, I got more done because I was more organized, and I had to get more done. So I did. So yeah, it. What people forget about having kids is that it's a natural thing. It's not an illness.
Yeah.
It's normal. I think
comedians that I know are just, there's a bit of self-centeredness to necessary.
Oh, definitely.
Necessary to be. It's ego, not a negative. You have to be able to be thinking about yourself and how your perception of things. And I think when you, having children must make you think that you have to focus on something else. It doesn't necessarily take away from your self-centeredness.
Yeah. I knew a cameraman. He used to drive home. And he'd park outside his house. He'd look up, and he'd wait for the light to turn up in the baby. Wait for the light to turn off in the baby's room before he went in.
Oh no!
The house.
Oh my god!
Wow!
But I can identify with that kind of feeling. You know, there's no shame to that. I don't think. You know, it's not straightforward. It's not easy. You know, the worst people I find are those ones that brag about how much they love being a parent. Because it's, you know, there's great things about it. And, of course, you'd never change it. But I mean, there's some real drags about it, too.
Well, thanks for that. You didn't mention that in the book.
I'm sure it's
worth it in the end. What can I tell you?
Yeah. Well, there's really one last thing to go, and that would be we've been asking all of our guests if they would give us a little song or sing us a little something.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're prepared for that.
With the nose flute. Should I do it with the nose flute?
Okay, let's rock it out. Let's make
so
this
I
happen.
Can do so this is 5 foot 2. You know, 5 foot 2.
Five foot two eyes of blue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Harry Hill. Merry Christmas to you, Harry.
Thank you. Merry
Christmas.
Mate.
Thanks for joining us on Songs in the Key
My
of
pleasure.
Laugh. It's
good
been
to
an
see you.
Absolute delight. And you.
Have a great Christmas, everyone. You need to get one of these, Phil.
That is the
They're amazing.
Most daft thing I've ever seen in my life. That's great. Thank you, Harry.
Goodbye, adios, farewell. You'll be glad to hear that we think that your interview went well. But we have other things to get on with now, so you're gonna have to go. I'm sure our paths will cross again, but whoever really knows? It's been fun, it's been musical, it's been comical at times. But now we have to leave you, so goodbye, goodbye.
So that is it
That's
for
it.
2021.
Merry Christmas, everyone. I hope you're having a great time. Happy holidays if you're not celebrating Christmas. That's our first series out of the way.
It is out of the way. I've enjoyed every minute of it,
Phil. It's been a lot of fun. And congratulations again to Canadians in Space for winning the Comedy Song Contest.
I'd like to thank all of our guests and our wonderful, wonderful producer, Mr. James Hingley.
We
thank
love you,
you
James.
So much. We love you, James.
And also everyone who's just been a regular listener. You're the reason we do it, and we hope that you enjoy it. And we'll be back sometime in mid-February.
Mid-February, yeah. Please do tell everybody that you know about the podcast, please, and keep on sending us in those submissions. We'll see you next year.
If you'd like to hear more or see more from Harry Hill, visit him at his Twitter account, @HarryHill, and check out his new book, Fight.
It's a sensational read. Wow. Please do so. Also, please do support us on patreon.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh and buy us a coffee at coffee.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh.
Thanks for supporting our podcast. I'm Phil Nickel.
And I'm David Timms.
And this is Songs in the Key of Laugh.
See you next year, guys. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.